translation, purport and word for word, by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Vritya. With the profession. Svabhava kritaya. Performed according to one's modes of material nature. Vartamana. Existing. Svakarma krit. Executing his own work. Hitva. Giving up. Svabhavajam. Born from one's own modes of nature. Karma. Activities. Sane. Gradually. Niragunatam. Transcendental position. Yat. May attain. If one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature, and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the nishkama stage. Purport. If one gradually gives up his hereditary customs and duties and tries to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his natural position, he is gradually able to become free from these activities and he attains the stage of nishkama, freedom from material desires. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Juta Padakamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So I pray for the blessings and permission of the devotees to try to speak something on this verse, on the Srimad Bhagavatam that we're reading. So, this whole chapter is Narad Muni replying to Yudhisthira Maharaj's questions. And Narad Muni is explaining the system of Varnashram. So in this chapter 11, Narad Muni is explaining about all the different Varnas, chapter number 11. And in the next chapter, chapter number 12, Narad Muni will explain all about the different ashrams. So start with Brahmachari and then go on from there. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. So this is all very important to understand. In the Gita, Krishna explains that everyone has two duties. Everyone has a Svadharma and everyone has a Sanatan Dharma. The Svadharma is one's duties in this world. So we come into this world with a material body, and with the material body comes different duties. Duties towards family, duties towards society, duties towards the demigods, different duties we have that we have to fulfill. But Krishna explains, along with one's worldly duties, one also has a Sanatana Dharma, a transcendental duty, an eternal duty, a spiritual duty, a duty to achieve self-realization, and a duty to ultimately serve Krishna. And what Krishna explains in the Gita is that one has to be able to do both side by side. So one has to be able to live in this world, have an occupation, a family, and perform their worldly duties, and one must be able to side by side cultivate their Krishna consciousness. Now, of course, this can bring a lot of complexities. Living in this world is not an easy task. On Saturday, we had a house program with some youth. They were all between 25 and 35, like that. And all, kind of, most of them have started jobs now. Some of them are married. And we did a whole session talking about how to balance worldly life, their job and their career and so on and so forth, and how to at the same time be able to cultivate Krishna consciousness. So I said to all of them at the start, okay, I want you to break into groups, and I want you to come up with five difficulties that you have balancing your day-to-day life and your Krishna consciousness. And they all came up with about 15 each. So I said, okay, we're going to go around and list all of them. So then I had a piece of paper, and it went round once, twice, 10 times. It took about half an hour just to list all the problems, and it could have gone on further, but I said, okay, we better stop there, try and find some solutions. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult to live in this world and at the same time cultivate Krishna consciousness. It brings complexities. And therefore people generally shy away from that. Arjun wanted to shy away from that. He said, Krishna, you're telling me to fight, and at the same time you're telling me to be spiritual. The best thing is that I leave everything and I just go to the forest. And Krishna, of course, told him not to do that. And Krishna says, like in the third chapter, Krishna says, karma naiva hisam siddhim astitam janakadayo, that kings such as Janak attain perfection by performing their occupation, their duties in this world. So why do you want to leave? You can actually achieve perfection through your duties. But generally people shy away from it. Shri Prabhu was telling me this, that one time someone came to Socrates and he said, I'm in a big dilemma. I don't know whether I should get married or not. It's a dilemma. So Socrates looked at him and said, you should definitely get married. And he said, definitely? Socrates said, yes, definitely. So he said, why? Socrates said, look, if your marriage is a good marriage, you'll be very happy. And he said, if it's a little bit rocky, don't worry, you'll become a philosopher like me. In other words, the situations of life, one way or another, if we perform it in the right way, will teach us something about our eternal duty and our eternal journey. So everyone has to understand what is the natural situation for them to practice Krishna consciousness within. And it will be different for everyone. As devotees of Krishna, there's certain things that everyone does. Okay, everyone chants 16 rounds. Everyone follows four regulative principles. Everyone reads Prabhupada's books. These are universal things that everyone has to do. But then the context within which we will do those things, that differs from person to person, because different people are made up of different modes of material nature. So, like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see a wonderful example. Three different examples I'll give you. And it shows how everyone is an individual. Krishna consciousness is a personal process. Example number one is Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was born in a very rich family, but from a very young age, he didn't have any inclination towards any of that. At a young age, he ran away to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he became very inspired, and he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "I want to leave home, and I just want to be with you." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Don't be a madman. Go back, and when the time is right, then you can actually renounce your family life." So he went back, but he still ran away. His parents caught him, they brought him back, he ran away again, they brought him back. It was like a daily affair. Raghunath Das would run away and they would bring him back. Finally, Raghunath Das went to Panihati and he got the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. And after that, he tricked his family guru Yadunandan Acharya and he left home. And he went to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. And when he came to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy. He said, "Raghunath Das, you have left family life. You are very, very fortunate. Krishna has saved you from the ditch of material enjoyment." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Your father and your uncle are just like worms in the stool in the ditch of material enjoyment." Very strong words. And Lord Chaitanya said, "You're very fortunate. This is the best thing that's happened to you, that you've been able to leave family life." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy. Now example number two, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he went to Jagannath Puri first. After converting Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Jagannath Puri, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his tour of South India that would go on for 2 years. So he traveled to various places and finally he came to Kurmastan. And there he met the Kurma Brahmin. Now the Kurma Brahmin was a family man. But after spending some time with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also decided that he wanted to leave. So he revealed his mind to Lord Chaitanya that "I want to leave family life." And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that, he severely chastised the Kurma Brahmana. "Prabhu kohe aiche bat, kabuna kahibe, grihe rahi Krishna nama nirantana loiba." Prabhu kohe, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, "Aiche, why have you said this? Why are you speaking like this? Griha rahi, stay in your home, Krishna nama nirantara loiba. Stay in your home and just chant Krishna's names." And then Lord Chaitanya told him, "Jare dekha dare kaha Krishna upadesh amara agyaya guru hanatare e desh." If you simply, everyone you meet, just tell them about Krishna, then the waves of family life, the waves of worldly life will not affect you. So in this situation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was telling someone to stay in their family. Example number three is Raghunath Bhat Goswami. Now when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling to different places, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Benares. And in Benares, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent some time with Tapan Mishra. And Tapan Mishra's son, Raghunath Bhatta, had some association with Lord Chaitanya. And he also became very inspired. So after Lord Chaitanya left, Raghunath Bhatta was in severe separation. And at the age of 20, he finally had the opportunity to go and meet Lord Chaitanya. So he traveled to Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya was very happy to meet Raghunath Bhatta, and they ended up spending 8 months together. Lord Chaitanya could understand Raghunath Bhatta's mind as well, that he wanted to just spend his life with Lord Chaitanya. And what was Lord Chaitanya's instruction to Raghunath Bhatta? He said, "You should go back home and take care of your parents, but you shouldn't get married. You should serve your parents, they're elderly, when they die, and when they leave this world, then you can come and join me." So it's very interesting to see this. Here are three examples. All of them wanted to leave home. To Raghunath Das Goswami, Lord Chaitanya was very encouraging. He said, you've left home? Great. Brilliant. It's the best thing you've done. To the Kurma Brahmana, he wanted to leave home. Lord Chaitanya said, no, what are you doing? You should stay in your family life. And to the third person, Raghunath Bhatta, he wanted to leave home. Lord Chaitanya says, okay, go back home, but don't get married, and then come later. Every single one of them had the same desire, but Lord Chaitanya gave all of them different instructions. Because Krishna consciousness is not stereotyped. It's not meant to be done in a particular way. It's depending on the person. Every person has their own spiritual journey and spiritual path to take. And why is that? Because in Krishna consciousness, everyone's an individual. Everyone has their own way of expressing Krishna consciousness. I always remember this episode from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, that as we know, Advaita Acharya was much older than Lord Chaitanya. He appeared before Lord Chaitanya. And Advaita Acharya was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And Ishvara Puri was also the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And Ishvara Puri was Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya's relationship with Advaita Acharya was in the mood that Advaita Acharya is a senior. He appeared before Lord Chaitanya, and he's on the same level as his spiritual master. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya always gave very much respect to Advaita Acharya. Of course, Advaita Acharya knew that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he didn't want the Lord to respect him. Rather, he wanted the Lord to treat him as a junior. And therefore, Advaita Acharya devised a scheme. A scheme by which he would be chastised by Lord Chaitanya. He thought, I have to put Lord Chaitanya in a position so that he will chastise me as though I'm a junior. This is what would really make me happy. I don't want him to treat me as a senior. So he thought in his mind that how can I make Lord Chaitanya chastise me? So he thought, what would really get on Lord Chaitanya's nerves? And he realized that if he spoke Mayavad philosophy, then that would really tick Chaitanya Mahaprabhu off. So in his house in Shantipur, where Advaita Acharya would teach many people, he began to speak Mayavad philosophy. Lord Chaitanya came to hear of it. Lord Chaitanya heard that Advaita Acharya was speaking Mayavad philosophy. So Lord Chaitanya said, I got to do something about this. So one day, Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, they jumped into the Ganges and they swam down the Ganges and they arrived at Shantipur. And then they came to Shantipur and they came to Advaita Acharya's house. And Advaita Acharya was giving a lecture. So they were listening and then they came into the lecture. And then Lord Chaitanya confronted Advaita Acharya. He said, can you tell me what is higher, jnana or bhakti? Advaita Acharya looked at him and he said, jnana is higher. He said, bhakti is useless if you don't have jnana. If you don't have knowledge, what is this devotion? It's just sentimental. It's absolutely useless. When Lord Chaitanya heard that, he became extremely angry. Lord Chaitanya didn't just verbally fight Advaita Acharya back. He physically got a hold of Advaita Acharya, pulled him off the Vyasasan, dragged him out into the courtyard, threw him down on the floor and started beating him. Now Vrindavan Das Thakur describes the scene. Lord Chaitanya is absolutely fuming. He is so angry. Advaita Acharya is being beaten. He's in ecstasy. Sita Devi, who's Advaitacharya's wife, is looking at the whole scene and she's crying. She's saying, Lord Chaitanya, stop. He's an old man. You're going to kill him. Behind Sita Devi is Nityananda Prabhu, and he's laughing and he's just dancing. And behind Nityananda Prabhu is Haridas Thakur, and he's just chanting his rants. It's an amazing scene that Vrindavan Das Thakur paints. In this one scene in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, you're seeing a variety of emotions, a variety of characters, a variety of relationships. Lord Chaitanya is angry, Advaita Acharya is in his ecstasy, Sita Devi is crying, Nityananda Prabhu is dancing, and Haridas Thakur is chanting. The amazing thing is that every single one of them are 100% Krishna conscious. Because everyone's an individual and everyone experiences or expresses their Krishna consciousness in different ways. And that's the beauty of this process. That sometimes you meet, like I meet people on the street and they say, you've become a Hare Krishna, you don't have any personality anymore. You know, you all wear the same clothes, you have the same hairstyle, you have the same makeup. Where's your individuality gone? But devotees are very individual. Just come into any Hare Krishna temple and you'll find out how individual the devotees can be. I remember 5 or maybe about 7 years ago, I spent some time living at Soho Street Temple. So as part of going and living at Soho Street Temple, one morning they put me on the reception. I always found it amazing at Soho Street Temple to be on reception, because you just never knew who was going to walk in next. It could be anyone. And I remember one morning, it was just before deity greetings, and this one homeless person came in. He looked, you know, very disheveled, you know the type of person I'm talking about. And he wanted to come in. So anyway, he didn't seem rowdy or anything, so we let him in. Straight after him, literally 10 seconds later, the doorbell rang again. And this time is one of the Hinduja brothers. And then I thought, okay. So then he walked up. And then after about 5 minutes, I had to go up. So I walked up the stairs and then I looked through the temple room. And then I saw in front of Radha Landanishwar, there was this homeless man. And then there was one of the Hinduja brothers, side by side, both with folded hands, both in front of Radha Landanishwar. And I thought, where else in the world would you find a scene like this, where a homeless person and a multimillionaire are standing side by side, doing exactly the same thing, and are, for that moment, just completely equal? That's the power of Krishna consciousness, that it can bring people together so that they're on the same spiritual journey, yet people can still be so different. So in this verse, basically what's being explained is that one has to find their position, their occupation, and their situation in life that suits them. And we do that through introspection, through discussion with the Vaishnavas. And the main options we have in terms of how we practice Krishna consciousness are really two. Your varna, what kind of work you want to engage in. And your ashram, what ashram you want to accept. Do you want to live as a renunciate or as a family person? These are really the options that someone has in terms of how they practice their Krishna consciousness. So, it's possible to achieve perfection in any varna and in any ashram. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the different Mahajans are explained. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu, Kumara Kapilo Manu, Prahlado Janako Bhishmo, Balir Vayashikir Vayam. There's 12 Mahajans, 12 great authorities on devotional service. Svayambhur means Brahma. Brahma is a grihastha. Svayambhur Narada, Narad Muni, Brahmachari. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu, Shiva, Grihastha. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu, Kumara, Kumaras, Brahmachari. Kapila, Brahmachari. Manu, Grihastha. Prahlad, Grihastha. Janak, Grihastha. Bhishma, Brahmachari. Bali, Grihastha. And Yamaraj, Grihastha. It's quite interesting, if you see the 12 Mahajans, they have completely different lives. They lead completely different lives. If you even just look at the 12 Mahajans, just in terms of ashram, half are renunciates and half are family. These things are given in Shastra to show us that one is not better than the other. It's just a question of what is most natural for the individual. So, here in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni says, if one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the Nishkama stage. So in the beginning, because we're affected by the modes of material nature, we are attracted towards doing certain types of work. So in Krishna consciousness, what we do is we engage devotees in work which is suitable according to their natures. And then that work they offer to Krishna. So this is karma yoga, you can say. Krishna says, yat karoshi yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever austerities you perform, whatever sacrifices you perform, do it as an offering to me. So we're attached to some type of work and then we offer it to Krishna. The attachment to the work is still there. We're attached. We have modes and we're affected by that and we want to do a certain type of work. So we do that work, but then we offer it to Krishna and it becomes spiritualized. That's one stage. Here in this verse, Narad Muni says, if you perform at that stage for a certain amount of time, then what happens is you go to the next stage. And what is the next stage? One actually becomes detached from even doing a certain type of work. One gradually becomes so purified that they're no longer inclined or affected by their modes to do a certain type of work, but actually now they're only concerned with Krishna's pleasure. They're only concerned with bhakti or devotion to Krishna. And this is really bhakti yoga. So Prabhupada sometimes gives the example that a girl and a boy, before the girl and the boy get together, the boy has certain likes. He likes to do certain things. Okay, maybe he likes to play football, maybe he likes to go to the cinema, whatever it is. He has his certain likes. But when the girl and the boy get together and they're in love, then it doesn't matter what they do. They can go to the park, they can go to the cinema, they can go abroad. It doesn't really matter to them so much what they do. They're just happy to be together. So these are like the two stages in spiritual life. In the beginning, we're attached to doing certain types of work, and then we offer that to Krishna. But in the mature stage, we have not that we don't have a personality, we do, but we're willing to do anything for Krishna. The only concern we have is that I have an opportunity to do some service for Krishna. And in that way, we advance in our sense of spirituality like that. So, I did some research just to see how Prabhupada talks about how we should be engaged in devotional service. And Prabhupada was always very accommodating. He said, if you want to be a brahmachari, be a brahmachari. If you want to be a grihastha, be a grihastha. If you want to do this type of service, no problem. If you want to do this type of service, no problem. Prabhupada always was able to see different individuals and help them to find a position in spiritual life that was natural and inspiring to them. One thing Prabhupada did say, Regardless of your ashram, regardless of your occupation, regardless of how you're practicing Krishna consciousness, one thing is very, very important. Prabhupada writes it in his letters again and again and again when speaking to his disciples. Prabhupada says one thing is very important, that you are fully engaged, that you're fully absorbed. Whether you're a grihastha, whether you're a brahmachari, whether you're doing this work or that work, one thing is very important, that everyone is fully engaged. Sometimes we give the example that a plane, if there's a plane which is going in the sky very quickly, and there's even a tiny hole, then what can happen is that the air can gush through that hole and rip the whole plane apart. So Maya is so strong that if we leave any small gap for Maya to enter, as they say, in like a needle, out like a plow, right? It could actually destroy someone's spiritual life. And therefore, Prabhupada was very strong that the devotees should always be fully engaged, fully absorbed. And it's possible in all statuses of life for one to be fully absorbed. And Srila Prabhupada himself is the example of how one can be fully absorbed in whatever stage of life they're in. Like in Prabhupada's life, he went through different stages. He was a grihastha, then he was a mendicant in Vrindavan, renunciate, and then Prabhupada traveled to the west, and in the final days Prabhupada became very sick and he had to stay in one place. In every one of those situations, Prabhupada was fully absorbed. It's not that he was absorbed when he was a renunciate, but he wasn't absorbed when he was a grihastha. He was actually absorbed and fully engaged in Krishna consciousness in every stage of life. Like, as a grihastha, Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gonitai ki jai. Like, we can take Prabhupada's stages of life and just see how he was absorbed in every stage. When Prabhupada was a grihastha, he had a pharmacy business. He had his pharmacy business and he would donate money to the Gaudiya Math. With his earnings, he would support his family and try to make them Krishna conscious. He would, in his spare time, help the Gaudiya Math to collect funds to develop their projects. In fact, when Prabhupada was staying in Bombay as a grihastha, he was actually helping the Gaudiya Math to even find buildings to start new temples and things like that. And Prabhupada was very expert at that time. He was known as Abhay Babu. And he was very expert, and at one point, one of the sannyasis in the Gaudiya Math, he said to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj that Abhay Babu is very expert. He should just come and join us in the Math. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, no, it's better that he lives separately from you. In the future, he will do everything, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said. So Prabhupada was very expert. Even as a householder, he was helping with so many different preaching activities. As a householder with a business, Prabhupada started the Back to Godhead magazine. He wrote the manuscript, he edited the manuscript, he got it published. Even that logo that we see on Back to Godhead, where Lord Chaitanya is, the lights coming down and the people are there, that logo was even designed by Prabhupada. Prabhupada even designed that logo. And Prabhupada started this magazine, Back to Godhead, as a grihastha. As a grihastha, Prabhupada would even write to the president. He wrote to Mahatma Gandhi. He wrote to Nehru. Prabhupada would write letters to all of these dignitaries, trying to win their support for the cause of spreading Krishna consciousness. In so many ways, Prabhupada, as a grihastha, was fully absorbed. Also, as a grihastha, Prabhupada was preaching. Prabhupada would go, and he was known as a great lecturer. Prabhupada was known by all the members of the Gaudiya Math as a very learned and very wonderful preacher. One of the brahmacharis of the Gaudiya Math, he explains, he used to go with Prabhupada for preaching engagements. His name was Govinda Brahmachari, and he later became a sannyasi in the Gaudiya Math. And he explains that he would go on preaching engagements with Prabhupada. At that time, Abhay Babu. And Prabhupada was known to be very experienced and learned. But when they would go to the preaching engagement, Prabhupada would say, "You're a brahmachari, you're in saffron, so you should give the lecture." And Govinda Brahmachari, he would say, "No, I'm just a new brahmachari. You're older, you're more experienced, you're more learned, you should give the lecture." So then he said that we came to an agreement. And what they would do is, Prabhupada as a grihastha, and Govinda Brahmachari as a new brahmachari in saffron, they would go to the preaching engagement, and Prabhupada would say to the brahmachari, "You sit on the vyasasan." So the brahmachari would sit on the vyasasan, and Prabhupada would sit next to him on the floor. And then Prabhupada would give him the mic, and he would say, "Okay, you recite the verse." So then Govinda Brahmachari would recite the verse, and then Prabhupada would take the mic, and then he would give the lecture from the floor. And then after giving a half an hour lecture, Prabhupada would give the mic back to him, and he would tell the audience, "Now everyone should take his blessings. He's a renunciate." And like this, they would go around and preach together. That was Prabhupada's humility. So we can see Prabhupada as a grihastha was fully absorbed. He had a job, he had a family, he had his own business, but still doing so much preaching activity, fully absorbed. Later on, Prabhupada left his family and became a sannyasi. And as a sannyasi, he was residing in Vrindavan. In the beginning, Prabhupada resided in Vamshi Gopal temple, and then later on, Prabhupada came to Radha Damodar temple. Of course, when Prabhupada came to Vrindavan, one of his friends told him that you're writing back to Godhead magazine, but really you should write books. Because people throw magazines away, and books people respect, they keep them. So he said, "You should write books." So Prabhupada, as a sannyasi in Vrindavan, he wrote Easy Journey to Other Planets. And then of course he began to translate the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada knew that the Bhagavatam would cause a revolution in the world. Tadvag Vishargo, Janataga Viplavo. The Bhagavatam would cause a real revolution in the misdirected lives of the world civilization. So Prabhupada began to translate the Bhagavatam. And in Vrindavan, as a sannyasi, Prabhupada was also fully absorbed there. We can go to Radha Damodar temple and go to Prabhupada's rooms and see how simply Prabhupada lived, how Prabhupada spent his time simply translating and going very deep into the teachings of the Bhagavatam. And we see that there at Radha Damodar temple, Prabhupada was fully absorbed trying to attract the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami for his preaching mission. And I always remember that wonderful picture of Prabhupada in his kitchen at Radha Damodar, taking prasadam and looking out of the window, looking out at the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. So, Prabhupada, even as a sannyasi in Vrindavan, fully absorbed, he would go from Vrindavan regularly to Delhi, and he would go back and forth trying to publish his Bhagavatam. And in Delhi, he was trying to make contacts so that he would eventually be able to go to the Western world. And so Prabhupada, as a sannyasi in Vrindavan, was fully absorbed. Finally, when Prabhupada got the breakthrough and he went to the West, and he began traveling and preaching, he was fully absorbed as a preacher. I always remember that chapter in Satsvarupa Maharaj's biography, where he calls Prabhupada the Jet Age Parivrajakacharya. So Prabhupada was like that, fully absorbed. It's difficult to fathom how Prabhupada was able to do so many things. In the morning he was translating, then he was writing letters, dealing with problems in the society, then he was lecturing, going on morning walk conversations, counseling devotees one-to-one, meeting the press, dealing with property issues. Prabhupada was doing so many things, completely, fully absorbed, fully engaged. After Prabhupada left the world, some of Prabhupada's disciples went to one industrialist, and they said, "Can you give us some tips on how to manage ISKCON?" So this industrialist, he looked at them and said, "Are you nuts? Are you asking me to give you tips on how to manage ISKCON?" He said, "Just look at your own spiritual master." This industrialist, he said, "I can't imagine how much of a transcendental manager Srila Prabhupada was." He said, "Your Srila Prabhupada, he was managing the whole ISKCON society and he didn't even have one piece of paper in front of him. No diaries, no organizers, nothing. It was just going on by Prabhupada's spiritual potency." So he said, "If you want to learn how to manage ISKCON, just study the life of your own spiritual master. He was the best manager." So Prabhupada as a preacher was fully engaged. And then even in the final days when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, fully absorbed. Prabhupada was very sick, but he said, "I want to be like a soldier who dies on the battlefield." They said, "Prabhupada, you're sick, you should retire." Prabhupada said, "For a warrior, there's no question of retirement. More glorious than retirement is to die on the battlefield." And therefore, Prabhupada said, "Till the last day, I want to die on the battlefield trying to spread Krishna consciousness." And therefore, we see those videos of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan in his final days translating the Bhagavatam, even though he's extremely sick. So from the life of Srila Prabhupada, we see that at every stage of his life, there was full absorption and full engagement in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was fully absorbed as a householder. He was fully absorbed as a mendicant in Vrindavan. He was fully absorbed as a traveling preacher. And he was fully absorbed even in his final days. So in this way we can see that what we have to do in Krishna consciousness is just find our occupation. Find a life situation that is suitable to us. And then within that situation to fully apply ourselves, to fully engage ourselves, and to fully absorb ourselves. And if we do that, then this verse is saying, if one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature, and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the nishkama stage. So if we do that, then gradually we will advance to a stage where we actually will become free of material desires and fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So there's a few minutes left. I'll just open up if anyone would like to comment.